For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Heat Nation, welcome back into Believe in Miami Heat for another week. Joey Levin here with you and joined, as always, by the two-time NBA champ, former Miami Heat point guard from France this week, Norris Cole. Norris, what's going on, my man?
What's going on, buddy? What's going on, Heat Nation? The champ is here.
Yes, sir. And it's like, you know, we took a week. We had that great conversation last week. For those of you who haven't heard the show yet, from last week with Stan Remy, go check it out. We had a little bit of a different episode last week where we talked about Stan's career. We talked about player development of some of the Heat players. There was so much that we got into. It was great. Go back and listen to it. But because of that, it was a little bit of a different week. We didn't really get into current happenings with the Heat at the time. So there's a lot to catch up on. There's a lot to catch up on, but also, Norris, it's like Groundhog's Day a little bit with this Heat team, because in that time since we interviewed Stan and since the last normal episode, the Heat went on a 3-game losing streak and now they've won 2 in a row. And it just seems to be the story of the season for this team. Every week it's like three losses in a row, 3 wins in a row, 4 losses in a row, 5 wins in a row. People are panicking, then people are happy. It just, we have 15 or so games left in the season and we still can't really get a full grasp of what to feel about this team because it's just constant streaks.
Yeah, that's true. The team is, they've been consistently inconsistent, which is very concerning, but I still have a great feeling that when it counts, when it gets down to closer to the playoff time, I believe that the habits that the team is practicing and that they're trying to do during the games, I think it's going to come to fruition. So, you know, I'm still hopeful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you look at this team, the one thing that they've had for the majority of this year that, you know, no other team in the East can say, particularly the teams ahead of them, is the majority of the core pieces from a team that made a huge run last year. So it's a matter of finding the consistency, like you said, and we're going to talk a little bit later on about, particularly at the very top of the Eastern Conference, that one team may never get that continuity this year because of the injury issues that they have. So we will get into that. And as of right now, as of today, the Heat they are in 7th place, but just 1 game behind the Celtics, 1.5 games behind the Knicks for the 5th seed, and just 2 games behind the Hawks for the 4th seed, but also just 3.5 games from being in the 9th seed. It's a crazy year for the Eastern Conference with this play-in situation.
Absolutely. It's a crazy year. And that's what's actually making this year interesting because, you know, with the injuries to the different impact players, everybody is going to have a chance at the end of the day. All they have to do is continue to, you know, stay up in the rankings, stay in the playoff hunt. And then at the end, you never know what can happen. And it's kind of unfortunate though, you know, that we have injuries this season, but in the year like this year with the shortened off season, it's kind of, I hate to say it, but it's kind of what I expected. You know, with a short off season, guys not being able to train the way they might normally train and having training camp. But the teams who are mature and can manage these things are going to be the teams that can have a chance to win the actual championship.
Yeah, it's fascinating. There's never been anything like it. And there's always been injuries. But when you look 1 to 10, right, because 10 teams make it into at least for the play-in this season, 1 through 10 in the East, there's only 2 teams that really haven't had any nagging injuries. The Knicks have not really had a nagging injury. And what was the other one? I was just, well, that might be it. Honestly, every other team has had pretty like consistent injuries up and down the board in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
So that's a fact. Everyone's been nicked up.
Yeah. Health is going to be
out west too. Same thing out west.
Mm-hmm. I swear I just had another team that wasn't nicked up, but then I look back at the standing and looking at them right now. And it's like, no, it's every team. It's pretty crazy.
It is. It is. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yep. Norris, real quick, before we move on and start talking all things Miami Heat this past week, got to give a shout out to our favorite sponsor, Bet Online. They are the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The playoffs are right around the corner. We got Heat Nation. We have 14 games left as we're recording this podcast. Also, UFC 261 this weekend, Jorge Masvidal, Kamaru Usman. Yeah, I'm going to be putting some money on that on Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sports book expert. Also want to give a shout out to Monster Bass, another one of our new sponsors. They've been with us for a couple of weeks. Now, why do I want to shout them out? Because I've mentioned this a few times. I've been trying to get back into fishing. I was never really a big fishing guy growing up, but I always wanted to. I tried here and there, but I live in South Florida. I should be doing it. I should be doing it more. And that's why I'm so excited about Monster Bass being our newest sponsor, because Monster Bass is the fun, affordable way to get the best new baits from the fishing industry's top brands delivered to your door each month. They're a premium subscription fishing company that handpicks the best baits based on where you live and fish. No more guessing on which baits are going to work. Just leave it to the pros at Monster Bass. It's basically, it's like having your own personal fishing guide, which I desperately need because I haven't fished since I was a kid. And it's changing the way bass fishermen shop for baits. They're quickly becoming the number one fishing brand of anglers everywhere. They're the best baits from the best brands, and you're covered by the industry's best customer service. So, and this is the big part, if you want to catch bigger bass this season, head over to monsterbass.com and use the code HEAT, H-E-A-T, 10, the number 10, and get $10 off your first box. Sign up for Monster Bass now. So obviously health is going to be one of those things. And, you know, let's start here with this last week or so for the Heat. One of the most consistent things for the Heat in a crazy year has been our guy, Bam. And no more so than this past week. I mean, he's had some higher scoring games. He's had some all around. He's had a bunch of, he's been consistent. He's probably all around, other than Jimmy, because of injuries, the most consistent all-around player on the team this year, because he's been there every night. And then two games ago, the Heat have now won two in a row as of this recording. Two games ago against the Nets, who also didn't have James Harden. The Heat didn't have Jimmy Butler, and then Kevin Durant got hurt in the game again. Bam Adebayo goes for 21 and 15, but has his first game winner of his career to beat the Nets. 109-107, and arguably more impressive, that didn't get as much credit in that game, was the possession beforehand where he gets switched on to Kyrie and guarded Kyrie and didn't allow Kyrie to score, and the defense that he played on one of the best individual scores in the NBA. So back-to-back plays to win that game by Bam, who has, we already knew he could be a star or is a star, but maybe like a true star making moment for him because it was on national TV and because of the game winner.
Absolutely, man. This, as a young player, these are the plays that you will start to accumulate as you become a star. And last year he took steps into stardom. He got the big contract, which he deserved. And this is just another, you know, another play that's going to add to the legend of Bam Adebayo. We all know his impact defensively and rebounding and playmaking ability, but he showed his evolution by being able to have the confidence to take and make that big shot. And I think that's going to do nothing but boost his confidence as a young player. When you're a young player, and you get the blocks, you get the rebounds, you know, you a playmaker. But when you start being able to make clutch baskets, man, it takes your confidence to a whole nother level. He already has made clutch blocks, as we've seen before, mm-hmm. and clutch rebounds. But for him to be able to make a clutch basket, I think it's going to add to his stardom, and I think it's going to add to his confidence as a player. And when you unlock that unconsciousness as a confidence in yourself as a player, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, and one of the most impressive parts of that final possession to me was there was no panic, right? Like a guy that is still young, who has not been asked to be that guy at the end of a game. Like this hasn't been his role yet in his career, where it's like, I just clear out and give Bam the ball. In a situation like that, against, even without their best players, the best team in the East this year, the team that people believe will come out of the East if they're healthy. He had the ball for a good 12, 13 seconds, and he ran the clock down to the perfect amount of time to get the final shot, which is not, it seems like such an easy thing to do from an outside perspective looking in. But when you're essentially a five who is not used to being the primary scorer at all times and ISOing on the wing for a end of game shot, the confidence and the sense to know when to go and when, how long to hold the ball and when to go to get a game winning shot like that is almost as impressive, because we know he can make a mid range jumper, but like the feel to be able to do it in that situation was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that was, like I said, that's just his evolution as a player, man. He's moving up the ladder in the quality of player that he is. He's already a high level player, but he's just, you know how they say it's levels to this. Mm-hmm. He's moving up levels. And like you said, him showing the poise to hang on to the ball and make the play shows that his confidence and his level as a player is still rising, which is a great sign for the Heat, given that he just signed that, you know, max deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like I think I mentioned, the possession before guarding Kyrie, they came out, ESPN Stats and Info put out these stats after the game. When Bam got switched on to Kyrie and was his primary defender, Kyrie was 0 for 8 in the game. And players in general, when Bam was their primary defender in that game, were 3 for 17 from the field. Like there was people after that game starting to say, and I think you've mentioned this on the show before too, so this is not a new thing for you, but it's the drum is starting to get banged a little bit, Bam, for defensive, to be in the discussion of defensive player of the year, not to get it necessarily, but to at least be in the discussion.
Absolutely. I think moving forward, he's going to always be in that discussion. Obviously you have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, you know, but you know, Bam is right there when it comes to valuable, you know, being defensively valuable to a team and anchoring, being the anchor on a great defensive team. And to me, like I told you before, he's always should be in the running. As I'm concerned, anybody who doesn't count him as one of the top defenders, I'm not sure what league they're watching.
Yeah, you know what I think will hurt in terms of just individual awards for defensively, I think Bam and Jimmy will have the same issue that, for example, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid will have with some voters, or, you know, with MVP, when you have guys like a Harden and a KD or an AD and LeBron, where some voters will say, because if you look at what Jimmy Butler's done this year, now he hasn't played as many games, so he may not get the votes, but he leads the league in steals and he's one of the most impactful defensive wing players in the NBA. So I do think that when it comes to just individual awards, you can get you know how that goes. You can sort of get knocked on an individual award just because some people say, well, it's Jimmy, and some people say it's Bam, and some people say it's Spo. You know, like it's not one of those things. Like it's a team that's known to be great defensively, has a great defensive player. It hurts them. I agree that he should be in the conversation. I'm saying this is the one thing that I think could hurt him even in the future, as long as he plays with Jimmy, because Jimmy's so elite defensively.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think it should. I mean, one year could be one, the other year could be the other.
I mean, I agree. Go ahead. I was going to say, I also was interesting. I wonder what you think, like, as we get towards the end of the year and we start discussing these end of the year awards, I also think that, I don't know that they will, but I think voter, like the way voters look at the awards this year should be changed. Like they should look at it differently because of the situation. Like I see people saying like, oh, Jimmy should be in this discussion, but he hasn't played enough games. Or like, I think Joel Embiid is, if not the MVP, he's 1A behind Jokic, but people are not, are going to say, well, he's only played 40 games. But I think in this year, I think you kind of have to take missed games out the window because it's such a unique situation and just look at the body of work in the games they played, unless they only played like 10 games. But if they played the majority of their team's games, they should be considered for these awards because of how unique this year is.
Yeah. I think it does matter how many games you play. Honestly, obviously the more games you play, the higher chances you're going to get. I don't think a guy who's played significantly less games should necessarily win it over a guy who he may have slightly better stats than, but he's played significantly less games. I don't think he should win it over the guy who's played more games, because part of your ability is availability. And mm-hmm. when the valuable guys, whether you can control the injuries or not, you know, we know we can't always control injuries, but the most valuable guys are the guys that are available to play. And so I don't believe a guy should be punished because he's played all the games and lose to a guy who's played significantly less games, if that makes sense to you.
Right. No, I think that's what the majority of people think.
You left a name out. You said Joel Embiid is right behind the Joker, but let's not forget about Dame Lillard either out there.
Well, Dame has, and I'm with you, because I actually, on another podcast, my prediction was that Dame would finish in the top three in MVP. But two things have happened with that one. One is he hasn't played as well in the second half, and Steph Curry.
Steph has turned it up, I must say.
It would be hard for anybody to say Dame would be over Steph at this point.
Dame is definitely over Steph, because Dame has done it longer. Steph hasn't done it long enough. Now, if he does this all the way to the end of the season, yes. But
yeah, I the other thing I'll say about the Steph situation, because I've talked about it a couple times, is the fact that team is going to be in the playoffs is a testament to just Steph's true greatness, because the roster is just not very good this year. I mean, he has really, really put that team on his back. And if you watch the games up until last game, he looks hobbled. Like he's had this tailbone injury that you could tell he's been struggling with, and he's still playing great.
But Dame been doing that almost his whole career in Portland, taking the team that's been injured, riddled with injuries and all that, and been taking them to the maximum levels that he can. So what Steph is doing, there's been stars in the NBA that's been doing that. You know, Russ had been doing it. LeBron always did it in Cleveland. I mean, what Steph is doing is not new. It's just that it's new for him.
I understand that. I'm just saying this, if we're just talking about MVP for this season. The Blazers have had some injuries this year, but the Blazers still are a team that should be a top four or five team in the West when they're healthy. This Warriors team, even at full strength this year, is a borderline playoff team. And right now they're a playoff team. Well, they're a play-in team because Steph is playing arguably some of the best basketball he's played in his entire career.
Oh man, he's on one. Like yeah. I said, if he keeps this up, he's definitely gonna be in the conversation. But
yeah, I think a lot of people are locked in on Jokic. Which is fair. That's fair.
Yeah, I mean Jokic is looking like modern day Larry Bird right now.
A different evolution. I'd say like the next evolution of Dirk, right?
He's not as prolific a scorer as Dirk.
He's averaging like 25.
Yeah, this is his first time doing that. Dirk is the top six scorer of all time.
Yeah, but he's not as prolific a scorer as Larry Bird.
Dirk is a better scorer than Larry Bird. What are you talking about?
But Larry Bird averaged 25.
And yeah, all the time. But Larry Bird also had the rebounds and assists. Dirk was not high.
That's why I mean. Well, that's guy. What I mean. That's why I say the evolution of what Dirk, like a 7-footer who could handle, but now he also can pass and do all the other things.
No.
I don't think Larry Bird. Jokic is like Larry Bird. Dirk. I get what you're saying from a like stats.
From a playing styles perspective too. He's like a Larry Bird type of player. He uses his size, his positioning. He doesn't dribble the ball as fast as Larry Bird, but he's tall like Larry Bird. He doesn't have a great physique like Larry Bird, but he can pass and play make and do everything like Larry Bird at his own pace. High arc and release shot like Larry Bird is like Larry Bird's little son.
Larry Bird.
He's definitely not like a Dirk type of player. No, sir. Nowhere near a Dirk style player.
Do I mean it in a sense of a 7-footer who can handle the ball and can shoot,
no,
but also
no. Larry Bird, bro, not Dirk.
Yeah, but I would say I just don't see Larry and Jokic in the same mold. I get what you're saying in terms of the skill. I was thinking of it more from a size perspective, like same position.
How tall you think Larry Bird? Larry Bird is like 6'10".
He's like 6'9". He's like 6'9", 6'10", but he wasn't a center. Like these guys are, I mean, Dirk was a 4, but he was more of a, he was a 7-foot. He's a legit 7-footer. Jokic is a 5. So it's like a hybrid. I mean, really, we could compare him to whoever we want. He's Jokic. Like there's never really been anyone like him. So
man, Greg Popovich is just one of the greatest coaches of all time said it. He's like modern day Larry Bird. And if you watch them play and watch they film, that's what he looked like. Go look at some Larry Bird film.
I watched a lot of Larry Bird. I get the skill thing. I think the size thing is what changes for me. He's
not that much bigger than Larry Bird. Larry Bird is a big individual. He might not weigh as much, but as far as height is concerned, Larry Bird is a giant out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fair comparison. I get it, man. Either way, that came up because I think because he's basically of all of the MVP candidates this year, he's played the whole year. So
that's what's going to be his advantage.
Yeah. And before the Jamal Murray injury, there was people picking them to potentially come out of the West. If you know, depending on what happened with the Lakers, because they really have been a great team and they're still very good without Jamal Murray. But that being said, I don't think Bam will get back to Bam is I don't think he'll get it this year, but he should be in the conversation. I think people are just still even though the national media knows how good Bam is, I still don't think I don't know if it's something about the Heat and the way the Heat play is so much as a team that the stats don't necessarily wow you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't get as much credit. Maybe that's what it is, but I just don't think he's going to get, I don't think he'll get as much attention for defensive players of the year as he maybe should.
Well, part of that is because, you know, Philadelphia is so good this year. Mm-hmm. And the hype around Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee, you know, that brings a lot of attention. And sometimes, you know, they forget about, you know, Miami because those three teams are getting a lot of headline news in the Eastern Conference. So obviously eyes are going to gravitate more to the players on those teams, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be no reason why he shouldn't be at least in the discussion as a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year in my eyes, you know.
Yeah.
But who am I? You know,
The voters look, voting is as much about narrative and
right, exactly.
personal and personal opinions as it is about performance. So exactly. That's what happens when an award, that's what happens when an award is voted on by the media. So it is what it is. Elsewhere. He's been so good for the Heat, but in this up and down year, one of the guys who has probably been the most up and down on the floor has been Tyler Hero. And a lot of the year has been down, admittedly. you know, he struggled at the beginning of the year. And then after the break, he had a little stretch where he started to turn things around a little bit. And then now over the last five, he's averaging 8 points a game, shooting 18% from three since the break, shooting 30% from three, just about 14 a game, and then about 15 a game on the season. But you know, before the show, we always talk a little bit. What are we going to talk about today? What's the show? And I mentioned to you, like, I really wanted to get into this Tyler Hero thing because I understand you made a great point to me about we can't harp too much on the age. And I was harping on his age a little bit. But Heat fans have seen Heat Nation, so to speak, has a big portion seems to have almost given up on this kid. And it's incredible to me that I understand he has struggles. There's parts of his game that need to evolve, but a kid who performed at the level that he performed last year for this team and the flashes that we've seen in a sophomore year as a 21-year-old, for people to be so hard on this guy that it's just like, oh, well, he's a bench player. You know, he's a good six man at best. That's what I'm hearing from people. Good six man at best. Like, it's crazy that the expectations have been lowered so much because he's having a struggling in his sophomore season.
Yeah, that's the what have you done for me lately era that we live in. No one has patience when it comes to, you know, young players anymore. It's just like, be a star now or you're no use or no good to me. No one wants to go through the process of what it takes to be a really good player. And that's the unfortunate part. If you're a true basketball mind, a true fan of the game, and understand how this game really works, you will understand that young players are going to have up and downs, just like people, regular people have ups and downs, let alone playing a high pressure sport like this. And so, you know, he's having up and downs, but this is not a prototypical year coming off of COVID, shortened off season, shortened training camp or no training camp, really. I mean, this is just not ideal. And so for him to be struggling, I'm sure he's working on his game. You know, he has to hang in there because he's not the only player. He's one of thousands of players that have came through this league that has struggled in any season, let alone the sophomore season. So I just think he has to hang in there. He has to keep his head down and on the grind and focus and not listen to the outside noise. You know, and for those who are being critical of him, it's okay to criticize his game, I guess, because that's fair. But just understand that young players go through ups and downs. That's part of being a young player. And I think he's shown that he's more than capable of being a high-level player potentially in this league.
Yeah, and I just – what happens with – and I've learned this since we started doing this show, Norris, right? Because of social media.
Right.
The fans – and we love the fan. We love Heat Nation, and every Absolutely. Team has their fan base. But what happens is fan bases, they become like this family almost on Twitter, and everyone talking to each other and having these discussions, and people get – so, and there's so much access to tape and breakdowns and this and that, that there's so many people talking about players' games that have really never been involved in. And I hate to be like one of these guys that's like, oh, you've never been involved in the game, so you don't know. Cause a lot of fans know, they watch a lot of tape. But I mean, I think it gets so overblown because, like you said, a 21-year-old kid in a COVID year who had a shortened offseason, when we say like, he's not explosive enough, or he can't guard this guy, or he's not good enough in pick and roll, or like these things that he hasn't even had a chance to like develop into.
Things that other players in this league struggle with as well.
Exactly.
Things that other good young players struggle with as well. I can go name a bunch of other elite young players that struggle with the same things he's struggling with.
Exactly. And I'll just say this, in terms of the actual on the court stuff, I don't know what Tyler Hero is going to be. Maybe Tyler Hero is a great six man. And you know what? There's no problem with that because we see how important being a great six man is in this league. Okay.
Ask Lou Will.
Exactly.
And, you know,
yeah,
Jamal Crawford, how good, you know, how important they were to their teams.
Exactly. Or Manu Ginobili.
Or Manu Ginobili, who's the best one of all of them.
Right. So that, but maybe he is Devin Booker. Who knows? We don't know. He's 21 years old. We don't know. Give the kid time to develop. And I think Absolutely. Part of what's happened, and then we're going to go into the other thing about it, which we talked about a little bit too, which it gets to me. But the other thing about it is the time.
Calm down, Joey. Calm down, Joey.
Part of the problem is the timeline has shifted for the Heat because of Jimmy. And that's not a bad thing.
Right.
Everyone has to understand that because the Heat got Jimmy Butler and because they went to the finals last year, your timeline in your mind of where this team should be shifted, therefore your timeline of what Tyler Hero and Bam and all these players should be shifted. Bam is a very unique player. It's very rare that a guy becomes as good as quickly as Bam has as a 13th pick in the draft. It just doesn't happen that much. So don't compare Bam's rapid development to a guy like Tyler Hero's development. He's in the second year of his career. Give him a chance to succeed before just saying, oh, he's a six man at best and that's it. Like, you don't know. None of us know. We don't know.
Right. Now, you're right. And plus, understand, there's levels to this. Bam has shown that he can be like a top tier player. But just because maybe Tyler hasn't shown that yet doesn't mean he still can't be a really, really good player in this league. You know, so like you said, give it time. Let's say he is just a elite six man. Every championship team needs an elite six man. So, you know, I believe he's going to be more than that. But if he is not more than that, you know, that's still a great, you know, that's still great to be an elite six man. But give him time. He's his second year out in this non-ideal climate that we're all living in. Patience is key. But you got whoever Joy's talking about, man, I need you to calm down. I can't have my co-host Joy, you know, on fire like this. Hey, Joey, man, get some ice water, man. Cool off.
Well, you know how, you know, a couple weeks ago, you got fired up when I was talking about guys being too old. I'm getting fired up about people giving up on a guy who's so young.
Hey, man, I feel you. Both of us need to drink some ice water.
but here's the thing that got me fired up was this. So there's two reporters that cover the Heat that did a podcast.
We don't name drop.
Listen, here's the thing. Heat Nation, if they listen to us, they probably listen to that too. And not only that, the reason I even found out, I don't listen to this specific podcast. The reason I went back and listened to it and I listened to the whole segment was because this quote that got pulled from the podcast went everywhere. It was all over the place. Okay.
Okay.
So essentially the gist of the conversation that these two guys ended up having about Tyler Hero was that Tyler Hero, I'll read the two quotes. The first quote, one of the first quotes was Tyler Hero chose to become a celebrity. He chose to become something outside the game, as is his right, with his breakfast cereal and his Tyler Tuesdays, his Chipotle bowl. And that's all well and good. But you know what? Other players, when they see a player doing that before they've truly reached it, I don't know if I want to say there's jealousy. They sort of take a scant view of the guy and say, wait a minute, buddy, you haven't done anything yet. And then the other reporter said, everybody is entitled to their own personal life and we don't try to bring it up. And look, the greatest player in Miami Heat history, there was a lot of stuff that we knew about that we didn't talk about. It's just the way this played out. And he grew through some things and we all know who we're both talking about, but ultimately the team starts to get a certain level of concern. In this particular case, the team has been concerned now for months and that's kind of where it's at, but they were concerned with players during the Big Three era. This one is different because the kid is 21. And the thing that drives me crazy about this is like, you're telling me that the team's been concerned about this for months, which means you as a reporter have probably known this for a little while and you chose now to say it on a podcast while he was having the worst stretch of his career.
Yeah, I don't.
And how does this benefit anybody? Like, how does this benefit anybody? Like, please, I make it make sense to me, Norris, because how does this benefit anybody? And in the social media era, you want this kid to succeed, but you're putting out reports that the team's concerned. You know he sees it. It's everywhere.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate when people bring up things that has nothing to do with this on-court, you know, performances. I believe every player has a right to use this game to elevate their life. And so if he does have a brand or things that he's doing off the court to make more money, to, you know, elevate himself as an individual, there's nothing wrong with that. And we should never criticize that, as long as it's not compromising the shield of the NBA or compromising his health or his game. And so to just bring that up, I don't know how necessary that was. I think we need to just stick to basketball. If you want to criticize, he say he's not playing well, then just say that. But to bring up, you know, personal things that, you know, he's not breaking the law, he's not doing anything controversial, I think you should just leave that alone. That's my personal opinion on the matter.
Yeah.
Because he's a young kid. He's a young kid in Miami, too. I mean, what would you do if you were a young guy from wherever anyone else is from and moved to Miami and had millions of dollars? I mean,
listen, I can tell you, Norris, I could tell you from personal experience of my 20s, if I was Tyler Hero, I would have been out of the league in a year. I wouldn't have been able to handle it. The money and the fame and all that. I wouldn't have been as responsible as these guys are. So I commend you. I commend anybody who's able to do it. Cause everybody wants it, but not everybody understands what comes with it.
Not as easy as it looks, bro.
I get it. And everybody I know. And I think everybody thinks they were like, I'll take it. I can do it. Not everybody's built that way. And that's how not everybody makes it too. But I don't like that now that he's struggling and we're trying to create narratives. And really where this all kind of started was because Kendrick Nunn is playing really well. The conversation was, when Vic comes back, should Tyler Hero be the one that gets benched and Kendrick Nunn be the one who gets minutes? And then it all turned into this whole conversation about Tyler Hero and how good he actually is. And is he struggling because he cares about being a celebrity too much? Like maybe he's just a second year player who's going through a little struggle. Because
exactly.
So like Kendrick, by the way, everyone was ready to trade Kendrick Nunn last year after the bubble. I don't think all these people that are saying Kendrick Nunn should be playing over Tyler Hero right now, you all were gassing up Tyler Hero in the finals. And we're ready to cut Kendrick Nunn because it looked like it was all a fluke. We got a good stretch out of him, but he's not good anymore. Now all of a sudden he's better than Tyler Hero. Come on, guys. Like maybe he is, maybe he's not, but they're both in their second year in the league. Like
that's just fans for you, man. Fans are, you know, more emotional. They're, you know, they've proven that they can be sometimes wishy-washy, you know. So that just comes with the territory of, you know, being a professional, and you have to work your way through it. And that's why you kind of commend those players who are able to be so consistent, you know, year in and year out. You know, you commend those guys. And then for the younger players, you just continue to work your process and understand this is part of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had to, as I've worked in the media over the years, learn and I worked in the league. As we know, like, so I think I have a little more empathy towards just the situation of knowing what player, like the life of being a professional athlete. So I've tried to not judge what players do off the court the way people love to talk about that. I just think we, as a community of media, because we're part of it now too, doing a podcast, we can be so much better than what we do in terms of the discourse that we have about players' lives. Like it's just, I know that when you're a public figure and you know this better than I do, but when you're a public figure, it just happens, but we can be better about the way we discuss these things because this whole conversation that they had about Tyler Hero was just made me cringe.
Yeah, man. Don't let it get to you, man. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. You know, some things are unfortunate, but
yeah.
Hey, we have our own podcast and we, you know, we do things a little different over here, and that's what makes us us, you know.
Yeah, we'll hold it down for Tyler because we still believe it. We believe in Tyler Hero. And
absolutely, and shout out Tyler Hero.
And I'll say this to everybody: we love you, Heat Nation. But when Tyler Hero is hitting a game winner in the playoffs, keep the same energy. All right, keep the same energy.
Talk to him, Joy. Talk that talk, baby.
Now, before we pivot and change subjects, I got to talk about something that actually does. It also frustrates me, but it's for a totally different reason. That reason is, you know, I live down here in South Florida, and my whole life I've had sunglasses, and I never want to spend a ton of money because I always break my sunglasses, they're not the right tint, or they break, or whatever happens, they're just not great. And that's why I'm so happy about our sponsor, Kanen. It's time to make your outdoor experiences better with Kanen. Kanen sunglasses are made exclusively with polarized lenses for optimal clarity. They're made with Japanese optics that make their lenses clearer, lighter, and stronger, and Italian handcrafted frames that are impossible to scratch. Trust me, I know. Also, they have these blue light glasses that if you're like me and you're on a computer a lot because you podcast or you type or you write or you do whatever you do, the blue light glasses that they sell on their website, blue light glasses are a lifesaver if you get headaches, just to keep that in mind. Use the exclusive code KanenCast15 at Kanen.com to receive 15% off your first pair. That's KanenCast15. Kanen, clearly better. Now, another guy who's been up and down this year, who was basically out the door at the trade deadline, was Duncan Robinson. And now all of a sudden, Duncan Robinson, fifth all-time in three-pointers made in Heat history, past Dwayne Wade. He's the only player in Heat history with 200-plus threes in two different seasons. And it's the second consecutive year that he's done it in a shortened NBA season. Listen to this. Yeah, I heard this stat, or I read this stat actually right before we started recording. Duncan Robinson is shooting 40.9% on 8.5 attempts from three per game. If he finishes over 40% on 8-plus attempts, he'll be the third player in league history with at least two seasons of those marks joining Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
He's an elite shooter, bro. He's the elite shooter, bro.
Unbelievable. It's one of these stories that's just like the story of how this season went. We were freaking out, you know, not maybe us, but people, like the narrative. It was like, has Duncan regressed? He was shooting like 38% in the first half of the year. And it was like, oh no, Duncan, what's wrong? And now he has a chance to have one of the greatest shooting seasons stretches, 2-year runs in the history of the game.
That's why earlier in the year when we was talking about it, I said Spo's gonna stick to the process. He's gonna keep confidence in his guys. This is why.
Yeah. He's one of the most because of how much the offense has just continues to be up and down and more down than up. He's just so valuable. He's so valuable. It's weird because it's like, what would Kyle, like the conversation was that Duncan would be one of the centerpieces if we would have got Kyle Lowry. But like, man, at this point in their career, I know how good Kyle is, but how much would that have changed the Heat to not have an elite shooter like this?
Well, we don't know. We don't have to live in the what if. All we have to do is say, we got one of the best shooters in the league.
That's true.
He was struggling early. Now he's on fire. And that's what he's here to do. We don't even got to go down that what if stuff.
Yep. And then the last two guys I wanted to talk about before we get into a couple other things to wrap up the show, talking about, you know, the rest of the East, is shout out to Dwayne Dedmon, who has played in three games and he's starting to already look like a steal. He's averaging 8 and 7 in the three games that he's played. He had a double-double in 15 minutes against the Nets. He looks different. Like, I remember watching him play here and there, and I know he's always been big. He's been a good, decent rim protector. He's tall. He looks like he's put on muscle. He's stronger. And he's like, he came in and basically he knew, like, it was like the Heat were like, here's what we need. We need someone to give Bam 15 minutes of rest a game. and you better rebound because we have been struggling rebounding. And he's in there banging. He's getting offensive rebounds. He's playing. Their defensive rating when he's on the floor is unbelievable. Like, he has been in just three games. It's like, whoa, another steal by the Heat front office of a guy who I bet if you polled 100 NBA fans, 90 of them didn't know he still was an NBA player because he had been hurt for so long.
Yeah, he's definitely showing his value. And one thing that the Heat understand is the value of pieces on a team. You don't need a bunch of stars on a team. You need players who are going to star in their role and what you need. And that's one thing that Miami has consistently been good at, bringing in pieces that are going to complement the team. You know, they're not trying to look for the next star all the time. You know, they want to bring in pieces that are going to complement the team so that the team can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're great at doing that. They're great at doing that.
Yep. And then Trevor Ariza has, over the last five games, shooting 56% from three. And obviously we heard this may be surprising how well he's played so quickly, but if you go back and listen to Remy last week on this here podcast, you won't be surprised to hear how good Trevor is when you hear the story of how badly Trevor wanted to play for Miami Heat. That was an incredible story that Stan told us last week, that he was, the way he explained that situation of Trevor getting down here. But he has been great for the Heat, filling into that four spot that we so desperately knew the Heat needed all year. He's been remarkable.
Absolutely. He's the ultimate pro as well. He's the ultimate pro. He's a champion. He knows what it takes. And his playing style and his attitude fits the Miami Heat way. He's tough. He has tenacity. He has championship pedigree. You know, he's battle tested. And he has, you know, a guy like Remy in his corner to, you know, keep him sharp. And so I think it was the perfect fit. And like I just said before, the Heat know how to go out there and find pieces that are going to contribute to their team, people who are going to star in their role. And Trevor, you can tell he's starting to get used to the Miami Heat way, and his shooting is evidence of that.
And I think it's so funny. I was thinking about the last year's deadline and how the Heat traded for Iguodala, and it was the Iguodala trade. But when it came to the playoffs, Jay Crowder ended up being the trade. And now with the uncertainty of Oladipo, we may end up, we don't know. Like, he will be back, but we don't know how healthy he is. We don't know what's going on. Like, the Ariza trade may end up being the most valuable trade for the Heat because of how well he's playing. And then the Deadman pickup, like, those two could end up being just as valuable in the long run. Because look, you bring Vic in, then now you're a whole different team. And obviously it changes everything and you're so much better. But let's just say he's not 100%. We don't know what's going on with him. You still have most of a big chunk of the players that took you to the finals last year, but you just didn't have those two, that couple pieces of Trevor, that stretch four and the backup big. Now you have them. And it's just sort of remarkable that the for the second year in a row, it's potentially, we had the big splashy move, but the moves that flew under the radar end up being the more important, could end up being the more important ones. Not that they are.
I agree with you. I think that these moves could potentially be similar to last year. Let's, you know, we have to be more consistent though before we could truly, truly believe it. You know, this 1-3 games, losing 4 games trend that we've been on all season, we have to limit that at some point before we can truly, truly say that, you know, we have a legit chance this season,
especially because of the play-in situation, right? Because right now they're seven. Actually, you know what, let me ask you about that before we finish up here. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the play-in, because that's been a hot topic around the NBA this past couple weeks, because Luka came out and complained about it a little bit, and then Mark Cuban backed him up, and now people have been going back and forth. And as I dug into it a little more, I kind of am on their side. Like, the play-in, the league should have set more clearly defined parameters on what the play-in, who's eligible to be in the play-in. Because if you look at the Eastern Conference right now, the Heat are 30-28, 2 games above 500. if the playoffs started today, they'd play the Hornets, who are 8. The winner of that game would be the 7 seed. That this is how the play-in works. 7 plays 8, the winner gets the 7 seed. 9 plays 10, and then and then the winner of the 9-10 plays the loser of 7-8.
Yeah, right. I don't agree with the play-in game. I believe that it was good for last year because of the extreme circumstances of the bubble and the NBA trying to make up for revenue that it might have lost. So last year it was okay, but now that they're back to, you know, basically a normal season, the regular season matters. Mm-hmm. If you want to get in the playoffs, get in the top 8, period. The regular season, it makes the regular season less valuable when you do that. The playoffs are not supposed to be for everybody. It's supposed to be for the best of the best teams. And traditionally, that's been the top 8. And so if you're not in the top 8, you don't make the playoffs. That's just plain and simple. I think the NBA is overthinking it. I think it's just too much. The top 8 make it. It makes the regular season be more meaningful. It makes competition, you know, better for the regular season for those teams that are in contention. And leave it at that. You know, in extreme circumstances like last year, sure. But don't get carried away. And make the regular season mean something and keep it at the top 8.
You know what's even crazier about it is, well, and I'll say this, and the reason why I turned a corner on it is because, let's just say it ended today. The Heat are 30-28. Let's say the Heat win that first game and beat the Hornets. The Bulls, if they were to win that game, the Bulls are 24-30. They're 10 games under 500. You're telling me a team that's 10 games under 500 can win one game and be a playoff team? They don't deserve to be a playoff team, but they have Zach LaVine. In a one-game series, Zach LaVine can go for 50. Or the Wizards, who are 24-33, have the same record. You're telling me you wouldn't be scared to play one elimination game against Russ and Brad Beal? It's just, but they don't deserve it.
Yeah, man. I don't even want to make it about the Heat, because that situation that you just said is crazy. That could actually even be possible. That is just crazy to even think about. But
it could be the Heat
on all levels. I think it's wrong on all levels to reward losing teams. Yeah. You know, like if you're not in the top 8, you're not in. You got to have parameters. Like the playoffs are supposed to be for the best of the best, top 8 in each conference. And that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And if you want to make it better, you don't add more teams to it. You actually make less teams so that the regular season has even more competition. But to add more teams to have a chance to make the playoffs, I think it's just, you know, it's kind of showing the politics of the league, because in some of those 9 and 8 seed teams are superstar players, you know? Yep. And so, you know, guys want to, you know, give everyone a chance, but I don't agree with it at all. I don't like to play in.
Yeah, and there was it's not funny. It kind of sucks for the Pelicans, but I will say this. There was speculation last year that the league created the play-in situation last year because they wanted Zion to be in the playoffs, and then the Pelicans didn't even make it. And then this year, they're not going to make it either. I mean, right now they're 4 games out of the play-in. So with like 14 games to go, it's going to be really tough for them to catch up. So for the second year in a row, if that was their goal, it's not going to happen. Now, as far as the East goes, I mean, we've talked about the East being up in the air all year, but now again, here we go. James Harden had a setback with his hamstring. He's out, I guess, indefinitely. Steve Nash said they're back to square one with the hamstring.
Wow.
He could be back by the playoffs. He could be back before the playoffs, but all they know is he's not coming back right now. And KD's obviously been banged up. The two questions I have are they, even if, let's say Harden doesn't play early in the playoffs, or even if he's banged up in the playoffs, are they still the prohibitive play? Like with just KD and Kyrie, are they the favorites? And then also, just talk about, like, even if they're all back for the playoffs, these guys have only played 7 games together this year, the 3 of them, Kyrie, KD, and James Harden.
Yeah, so I'll answer the first question. If KD is healthy and Kyrie are healthy, they're still going to be the favorites. They won't be, like, the prohibited heavy favorite like they would be, but they still would be the favorite because, I mean, those two are proven champions. Philadelphia hasn't proven it yet. Giannis and Milwaukee hasn't proven it yet. So I still believe Brooklyn would be the favorite. But I believe that they're very, very beatable with just those two. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe that they can be beat. If all three of them are healthy, if all three of them are healthy, then, you know, even if they don't have that much playing experience, good luck beating them. It's still going to be tough to beat them. There's like I said, they're still going to be beatable because their defense is not great. But sure. The amount of points that you're going to have to score night in and night out to beat that team, 80 to 90% of teams in the NBA are not capable of doing that.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was thinking the only team truly right now, and I watched it because and it's probably a recency bias on my part too, mm-hmm. but I've been watching Philly so much lately. And I mean, Embiid is so good. Embiid is so damn good. And the thing is like, yeah, you're going to have to score a lot of points with them, but they're not going to, they can't stop Embiid. Now the question becomes, can Embiid do it? You know, can he stay healthy? Is he fresh enough? Is he conditioned enough to do it every night in the playoffs, long-term, whatever. But what I'm watching him do, he has taken his game to a different level that we haven't seen from him in his career. And that's the one guy that I truly believe could really, like, no one can shut him down the way he's playing right now.
Nah, Joel Embiid is an X factor, but the real X factor is Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, Danny Green with Doc Rivers.
Right.
That's the big thing, you know, having him play at MVP level is great, but having him have a coach who's won it all before, I think that gives them a considerable higher chance as well, having Doc, you know, be the head of the ship.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, we never even got to talk about LaMarcus on here, did we? Because we did the show with Stan last week. We never really got to talk about LaMarcus retiring.
Shout out to LaMarcus Aldridge, man. I'm sad to hear about what happened, but I'm happy he was able to catch it before it was too late and be able to adjust and, you know, get some quality time with his family. Cause you know, nothing is more important than your life and than your health and your family. So, you know, I'm sad that he had to retire abruptly like that, but I am happy that he caught on to what was going on and he is able to address it and be safe now.
Yep. And you know what? Something good will happen for him. Like,
absolutely.
He'll go back and coach, or he'll go and work in a front office and he'll get his ring like that. You know what I mean? Like,
or he can just relax and spend time with his family.
Right. I'm saying
enjoy the millions that he
absolutely
earned.
I just mean like he could have retired 2 years ago, 3 years ago. He went to New Brooklyn to get a ring. So if it's bugging him that bad and he wants if he has the itch, he can go back, you know, get into coaching, get into the front, do something and get a ring that way. Like, it'll happen for him if he really wants to, because people want to be involved with a guy like that who is known as just a great pro and also a border. He's not a Hall of Famer, but a borderline Hall of Fame career. Because he had a stretch where he was one of the best bigs in the NBA.
Yeah, what happened to him was the league, right during his heights of his powers, the league switched on him. Steph Curry switch happened right while he was, you know, at his powers in Portland. So, you know, he had a great career. I'm not sure. I don't think he'll be a Hall of Famer, but he definitely had a great career. I believe he should have his number retired in Portland for all of the great years he gave that
season. Oh yeah, for sure.
He had a great career.
And I'll tell you, even his last few years in San Antonio, like to go there to basically be Tim Duncan's replacement for a few years and keep that franchise relevant while they were rebuilding was impressive.
Absolutely.
Because they, you know how it is, like that franchise could have been bad for a minute, but he went there and chose to, you know, help them in a transitional period where realistically he had to know that it was an uphill battle for them to win a title there. But you know, replacing a legend's not easy. So, at all, you know, shout out to him for that. And yeah, I agree 100%, you know, just happy for him that he was able to do it while he was healthy and that he wasn't forced to do it in a sense of something bad happening. Like, he chose to not risk it anymore and went out on his own terms, so to speak.
Absolutely.
All right. Last, Go ahead. Sorry. What'd you say?
Go ahead, brother.
Last thing that I want to get your thoughts on that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about since last time we talked. D Wade is a partial owner of an NBA team, but they're in Utah. It's the Utah Jazz. D Wade is a partial owner of the Utah Jazz. What are your thoughts?
That's a big time move. I'm happy for him. Congratulations to my big bro, D Wade. He's continuing to, raise the standard for players to be more than just basketball players. Obviously, I'm sure it surprised a lot of people that it was Utah, but, the NBA is a big family, and, I'm happy to see that he's promoting ownership, showing young guys that, hey, we can be more than just players, that we can actually, be in ownership position. So, shout out to D-Wade for sure.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. It was such a weird reaction because Heat fans were like, what? Why isn't he with the Heat? Let's have him have an ownership stake in the Heat. And people got mad at Mickey Arison and this and that. But it was, I'm happy for him because it's an incredible – I mean, how many guys have ever done it? One? Two? I mean, Magic. Was Magic even a part owner in the Lakers at any point, or is he just a part owner of the Dodgers? Obviously, MJ owns – the Hornets, but like how many former players are part owners of currently of teams? So it's not many, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not sure the number, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And I think more players, you're going to see more players do this. And he's, he's a trailblazer. D-Wade is definitely a trailblazer for sure.
It was just when I saw that it was the Jazz.
Yeah, that was surprising to everybody.
I was just like, what a world we live in. D-Wade is
we all know the rumors. We all have heard the rumors of what goes on out in Utah. So for him to be a part of that ownership group,
Norris, I know you're a good dude. So you just want to be a nice guy. So you call it rumors. You could call it rumors, but we know what Utah. We know about Utah.
Yeah. So I'm glad that he's there to.
To
help write that.
That's what I was going to say. Is that maybe that. Having him being involved in that team and that community helps, I don't know that it's going to change a ton because of what that, it's a different place, Salt Lake City, but maybe it'll help. Maybe it'll help. You never know. Maybe he can start pushing things forward a little bit.
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
Shout out D-Wade though. Shout out to Wade County, man.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hey, we got 14 games left. Then we got a playoff run to look forward to. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode last week with Stan. If you didn't hear it, go back and listen to it. It was great. We will have more guest episodes in the future. We'll be back next week. The Heat play tonight as we're recording this. Heat have like four more games before the next one. So hopefully we continue this win streak and we come back to you. We'll take the win streak, even though it is just yet another streak. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you guys for listening. Believe in Miami Heat, presented by Bet Online. Got to get that in there. Norris, you want to go ahead and take us out?
Heat Nation just completed another episode. Stay with us and make sure y'all go get some ice water for Joey and cool him off. He was a little hot this episode. Got to cool Joey off. But until next time, the champ, we out!
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.